it's a societal sickness, you know, that we have, that we believe that we are not good enough. And it transfers down from parent to child, from advertising to child, from media to child, from child to child. And so I, you know, that's, again, that's why I do the work I do, is because I don't want kids growing up the way I did.
Life is all about relationships. Lovers, family, body, or money. How satisfied you are can be completely explained by how you relate to things around you. This is Sophie Jaffe, and together with my husband, Dr. Adi Jaffe, we are here to explore and teach you how to maximize your relationships and achieve a happier life. Let's get ignited.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Ignited Relationships Podcast. I'm Adi Jaffe.
And I'm Sophie Jaffe.
And we're starting, I think it's got to be like one of my favorite months just by the topic.
Yeah, this is your tried and true.
This is my jam.
Yeah.
Fuck shame.
Fuck shame.
This whole month we're going to be dedicating it to ways of avoiding, removing, dealing with shame in your life and people around that might be causing it or situations that might be making it worse.
Yep.
Let's Super do it. Excited. Let's do it. Okay. Ready for the review?
Yes, yes, yes.
Thank you, Sophie. This one is about you. Happy birthday, Sophie. It's from Zia Babe. I've been listening for a few months. I love all the topics. Thank you for everything you do. And you both have taught me so much about addiction and relationships. This podcast has elevated me and pointed me in the right direction. So excited to sign up for your monthly memberships. Yay. I can't imagine going through life without you both and this incredible podcast. Yeah. Gratitude, gratitude, gratitude from Salem, Oregon, with love.
So beautiful. Thank you so much for that beautiful review. We so appreciate it. And I know I've said it before, but that is what keeps us going through all of the work and all of the challenges. Your reviews, whether on DM or email or the reviews on wherever you listen to podcasts, it makes our day.
Absolutely. So we want you to leave more because we read them when we really, really, really care. Zia, if I'm pronouncing your name right, please get in touch with us. info@ignited.com or by Instagram or any of those things, and you will get our care package.
Woohoo!
So cool. Sophie's got a quote for you.
Okay. So this topic today is, yes, all about fuck shame. It's also a lot about body image, the complexity, bulimia, all sorts of things. So A, trigger warning, any sort of body image stuff, eating disorder stuff, we do get in pretty deep waters.
Yeah, and Dana dealt with all that herself, so she talks about her own experiences.
Okay, so I'm going to read a quote, and it's by dietitian Anna. And I found it on the IG, and I really, really love the way that it sums up body image. Body image is complex and processed in 9 different regions of your brain. This is why you feel one way in your body in one moment and entirely different in the next. This is why you might have a magic mirror and a hated one. This is why you feel one way in your body when you're stressed or tired or with folks you might not enjoy. This is why you might be feeling differently in your body in the context of not seeing other humans. This is why body image will never be static. This is why body image is an endless part of being alive. This is why body image should not impact self-care decisions. And again, this is Anna Sweeney, and she's at Dietitian Anna.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it just speaks, you know, even the conversation we have here today, is it's a complex one. And I think a lot of times people try to simplify it. We try to kind of believe that everything is consistent and no matter where we are, we'll feel the same. And no matter who we are, we feel the same. Yep. But we know that. And you actually picked a quote from Dana that you really, really liked earlier that spoke generally about the fact that, you know, we have the right of talking to people in our lives and saying, hey, when you comment on how I lost weight or how I gained weight or how my hair's changed or how I look pretty or not right now, it hurts me or it makes me feel uncomfortable and I'd like for you to stop.
Yeah, and it's just old programming. Like, let's just change the future by the way we speak. Let's change it. Let's affect the future right now by the things we say and the comments we say and the energy that we put into the world. I know a few people still in my life, not really in my generation, but older people that are in my life that will still comment on the body and still say, you're looking really skinny. You're looking really...
As a good thing, right? They're saying that like as a good thing?
Sure, as a compliment.
Yeah.
That is no longer a compliment. It hasn't been for 10 years. So that is outdated. That is not welcome. You never know who you're triggering, affecting. Luckily, I have been in the work for so long that it doesn't affect me necessarily, but it could. It could loop me into a cycle. It could trigger me to want to pull my scale out and then play that game again or control my food. So even just hearing a friend say it to another friend and seeing that they go into that place of shame or trigger or whatever it is, then triggers me.
Or it can, right, it can trigger you if somebody says it to somebody near you and you're like, oh my God, they didn't say it to me.
Sure.
What does that mean? Sure. Why didn't they say it to me? And I mean, how many of us know of people around us making comments about the way we are, look, act, whatever, and then we take it so personally without ever mentioning it to them, by the way. That's why I love the fuck shame theme so much. It's just like the quote you just mentioned, so much of the shame, so much of this reaction is actually in our heads. We're reacting to old programming, old experiences, old things that have happened to us, maybe sometimes below consciousness even, things that happened when we were kids that we've just held on to for so long. And now, as you mentioned, the word trigger, people just trigger that shame for you over and over and over. And we don't talk about it because shame is one of those hidden emotions that we try to do everything we can to not expose to others. So a family member might say this to you or somebody close to you, and you just actually won't react externally. You'll just be hurt inside.
Yep, exactly. It's just so gnarly. And today I'm taking a tarot card course. For anyone that's curious, because I have gotten lots of questions, it's with Lindsay Mack. And I really did my research. I've been listening to her podcast for a long time, Tarot for the Wild Soul. She's absolutely lovely. And now my teacher. And I'm so grateful to be a part of it. But today we were learning about different cards. She was pulling about the devil. And we all have negative connotations about certain things and feel afraid. And there's all these crazy witchy stories about like, what is good, what is bad. The devil card especially can feel a little frightening, or the death card, right? So how she explained the devil card, I actually just made one single note about it because it related to this podcast today. And she was talking about how, like, if the devil card comes up, a lot of us struggle from addiction, struggle from substances, struggle from bad habits. And she was saying, like, the brain doesn't necessarily want the thing. It wants the cycle of shame that happens afterwards. And that's what it's really addicted to. And so she's saying, like, the devil card, when it's presented, is a time to really look at your life and reevaluate, to enter into a profound place of review. What is it that I can look at right now that maybe I need to take the magnifying glass to? What cycles am I in? What unhealthy habits? That sort of a thing. It doesn't have to be scary. It's just like, what can I look at a little bit differently right now? I just loved that it's like a recentering and a rebalancing and a coming back to, and how she was just, of course, I don't want to say there's no science or brain, you know, activity or anything that's affecting you. Of course, there's an addictive quality to all drugs and to all substances. I don't want to discount that. However, like you used to say, sometimes the associations can be stronger or as strong as the addictions itself.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I agree that people want the shame. I think people are
addicted to the cycle that is after doing the thing.
Yeah. It's habitual. And also maybe people are addicted to the relief of the shame that they get from the thing, which alone can be incredibly powerful, even outside of the biological sort of effect, right?
We like the lying and the hiding and all of that, or just the shame itself?
No, I mean, I think people feel really badly about themselves oftentimes. And you know, whatever the addictive behavior is, at least takes their mind off it in an extreme way for long enough. Unfortunately, there is a huge down, and there's no doubt that the shame comes oftentimes after the recovery from that. And then, yes, people essentially get re-addicted to the pattern of having to deal with that shame or having to deal with those negative emotions, having to deal with the consequences over and over and over through the same thing that caused it in the first place. And that can be a really terrible cycle to be stuck in.
Yeah. Well, I'm so excited to present this podcast to you guys. It's an amazing conversation. She's so knowledgeable. Go give her a follow after you listen to this. And thank you for listening. And remember to leave a review so that we can read it aloud and you get entered to win. If we read your review, then we will send you a special care package.
Absolutely. And just tune in this whole month. Like I said, this is a favorite topic of mine. We're going to hit up shame in many, many different ways. So today, the relationship to the body and your weight and things of that nature. We're going to talk about your relationship itself, the like sexual intimate relationship. We're going to have an amazing episode on that. So just stay tuned in. If you're into the kind of F shame piece of what we do here, this month is going to be something you love.
Well, and also just knowing that it isn't just about addiction to like a substance. I think a lot of times we associate shame with addictions. At least I do because of your work, yeah. But it's so much bigger than that. And it's so much deeper than that. And we all have little tiny layers of shame built into us from different things from our childhood, from our past, from past relationships. So really digging in and asking yourself, like, where am I still holding on to that shame?
Absolutely.
Mwah. Love you guys. Enjoy.
See you on the other side.
This episode of the Ignited Podcast is brought to you by Philosophy Superfoods. The Philosophy offers cleanses and other nutritional products that are unlike any of the other supplements and detoxification programs on the market. Why? Because they actually nourish the body with whole, live, nutrient-rich foods instead of depriving you and leaving you hungry. Have you ever tried a cleanse only to find out that you can't make it through a whole day because you're starving? Ever try a superfood shake that made you nauseous because it was so disgusting you'd rather not eat? The Philosophy fix all that with a simple set of offerings that load up your body with nutrients while actually tasting good. Makes sense, right? Each of the Philosophy superfood and protein blends is vegan, raw, gluten-free, and has absolutely no filler ingredients. With over 15,000 satisfied customers, including some of the world's biggest celebrities like George Clooney, Gerard Butler, Lea Michele, and over 10 years of experience, this is the best stuff you can get. To buy some or find out more info, go to our website, thephilosophy.com.
So Dana, I know your story is big and you've been through a lot to get yourself to doing what you do today, and you do a lot mm-hmm. in this moment. Now, I love hearing the victories. I love hearing what's coming out on the other side and what people have achieved. But what I think sets it up for our listeners to really be able to connect is understanding how you got to this place. Mm-hmm. Like how you got to the place where doing all the work that you do now matters to you.
Right.
And so I know in looking at all your work and all this body positivity stuff that you do, I understand that there's a real drive, and we'll get, this is called Ignited. We'll get to what your drive and passion is in a second, is about helping correct some of the same things that were going on in your life when you were growing up.
Absolutely.
But I thought it'd be really wonderful to just go back to that place for a minute and talk about what was it like for you growing up around your own struggle with body image, eating disorders, and things of that nature.
Yeah. I mean, so a great question. And I always like to talk about my story because I do think it helps give people an understanding of why I'm so passionate about this. I had a parent who, they grew up with very cystic acne and grew up really bullied for their skin, really, really, you know, insecure and told that they didn't have value and worth in their own appearance. And so I, you know, have similar genetics. And so when I was in middle school and elementary school, I started developing acne, and I grew up with that same belief that my parent was raised with, of that unless my skin is clear, I have no value. I'm not beautiful. I'm not lovable. And so I really grew up with this understanding that my physical appearance was the most important thing about me, that I had to be perfect, pretty, whatever, fit to society's beauty standards in order to be loved by that parent or respected by classmates or, you know, anything, fit in with the popular kids at school, just any type of love and acceptance in this world.
How early do you remember having explicit thoughts about that? And do you remember some specific stories where you went to school or something happened or somebody said something to you and it just clicked and resonated?
Yeah. So this is that's a great question. And it's interesting because when children are taught that their appearance is more important than their insides, what happens is someone can say the smallest thing and it ends up being, it feels like some of the most violent words. So it's interesting. So after I've done all this therapy and I've worked on myself over the years, I can look back and go, you know what, that kid, what they said really wasn't that bad. It really wasn't that toxic or harmful. But for me, being such a fragile child, thinking that if anyone said anything about me, that meant I'm ugly, unworthy, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I can look back and, you know, I remember I was in like second grade and I think I had chicken pox. And when I came back to school, I think I had some like scarring or some, you know, some residual, like that redness, you know, those little red bumps that you have. And I remember one of the kids said, "Oh, it looks like you have zits all over your face." And I remember, and it's not even, it was, it's almost like it was said in a neutral way, but I remember that. I remember that almost as like a trauma that happened to me as a child that, oh my God, someone, I feel seen. Someone is seeing who I truly am. I cannot hide. I feel that, you know, it's not about who I am as a person. It's about my external appearance. You know, and there was a lot of things, you know, I remember growing up when my skin was breaking out and, you know, my parent, instead of saying, "Good morning, I see you, I love you, it's so, I hope you have a great day. You know, I hope that you had a good sleep." It's, "Ooh, we got to go to the dermatologist. Ooh, we've got to take you to the doctor immediately." And it was, again, that validation that, the second I see someone, the second someone sees me, that what matters is physical appearance. It's not that I care about you, I love you no matter what. It's, oh God. And so that anxiety that my caregiver had transferred onto me. So when I looked in the mirror and I saw something, I got anxious. My body tightened. You know, when I was in middle school, I had a guy break dump me through a note, and the note said that I had bad skin. So, you know, I have these collective memories, and when you add them all together, they really hurt, but individual, they just felt like these little stabs and these little wounds that just made me so much more vulnerable and just so much more, you know, just smaller, wanting to take up less and less space.
And I think the other thing that I hear in here, you know, we talk a lot about our perspective on the world, and as you're growing up and you're developing that perspective, we've got this thing in our head called a confirmation bias.
Of course.
And that means that as you get more evidence that these are the only things that are important, your brain keeps finding more and more evidence that these are the only things that are important. So that guy might have broken up with you and another guy might have been interested, but your brain goes, "Wait, I'm ugly. Yeah. My face doesn't look the right way. Mm-hmm. That guy just gave me proof of that." And it discounts the other evidence. And I think that's hugely important. Because everybody has stories like this. I talk about my 97 on a math quiz story that has to do with achievement in school. And it's the same sort of idea. It's like 100 is the only thing that's okay. Anything below that is not, based on probably a sarcastic remark my dad made, honestly.
Of course.
Knowing it now.
And I do 100% agree with confirmation bias. I think that we all really struggle with it. I do want to point out though that, you know, little kids, especially young girls, especially teens, young women, we are raised in a society that tells us that our beauty is the only thing that matters. And it's increasing with little boys. I mean, we have eating disorders with little boys on the rise. So I'm not saying that, you know, girls now have it worse, but I'm just saying that as a society, we place much more value on female beauty and telling women that their appearance is the only thing that matters. So while, yes, there's the confirmation bias that, you know, I was taught to be looking for the negative. I was taught that the world is unsafe and I have to keep myself safe means to close myself off, to not allow myself to be seen. But at the same time, media is telling me that. The cartoons I'm watching are telling me that. The ads I'm watching are telling me that. The magazines around the house are telling me that. The Weight Watchers stuff, you know, the meals in the freezer are telling me that. The diets, you know, every single thing around me is adding to that, I guess you call it confirmation bias, or that diet culture messaging.
Like a collective confirmation bias,
It's a collective, it's a societal sickness, you know, that we have, that we believe that we are not good enough. And it transfers down from parent to child, from advertising to child, from media to child, from child to child. And so I, you know, that's, again, that's why I do the work I do, is because I don't want kids growing up the way I did. And it really, and I do, while I do work with kids and I do love working at schools, my passion is working with parents and working with teachers and caregivers, because that's where the pain starts. You know, that's where we have so much stuff that we pass down because we don't know any better, because that's how we were treated as children.
Exactly. Yeah. It's just this like systemic poison that is passed on. Like, I remember my mom never really talked about, she would tell me I was beautiful, but it, mm-hmm. it was, I didn't necessarily think of it as a physical thing. It was just, I was a beautiful person. Mm-hmm. But my best friend growing up, her mom was always on a diet and drinking diet Pepsi or diet Coke and always going on walks and doing workout videos and commenting on our physical appearance and bodies, and it's impossible to avoid, you know, like as much as we all try, it's impossible as a society, the society that we live in, to avoid this pressure, to avoid that being the focus. And it's really frustrating.
Yeah, you know, like, 100%, 100%. And kids look to parents for survival skills, to learn how to navigate the world. So if they see their parent, you know, again, dieting all the time or talking terribly about their bodies all the time, children learn, you know, little girls learn that that's how their bodies should look and that's how they should feel about their bodies. And little boys learn that that's how women's bodies should look and that's how women should feel about their bodies. And increasingly little boys, now we have all these magazines where they have to have a six pack. They, you know, I know we had talked earlier before we started recording that we're not going to be doom and gloom and positivity, but I do think it's important to point out all of the things that we are fighting. You know, and I think it's important to remember that the things that we feel are not our fault. Mm. You know, I think so many people, we feel like I'm an individual who's failed the diet. I'm an individual who is ugly because I couldn't stick to X, Y, and Z. I couldn't, you know, I can't afford the nose job. I can't do this. And it's like, if we can know that we're actually all together in this and you're not alone and it's not your fault.
Yeah.
It's like, again, like releasing the shame.
Well, I think we're bigger on transparency than just positivity, but I'm wearing my fuck shame shirt.
Yeah.
We talked about it a little bit before we started this. And I think it goes deeper than I'm the person who failed the diet. It goes, I'm the failure who will never succeed at looking the way I'm supposed to look.
Yes.
I'm the lazy piece of you know what who can't get his shit together. That's the inner conversation that happens because we keep trying different things. We keep falling into different cycles.
I also want to I love what you said about wanting to shrink and hide and dim your light. I think that that really resonates for me. So even though I didn't come from a home where the physical appearance was necessarily something we talked about, and we never had like People magazine or any of that kind of stuff.
Awesome.
I didn't see any of that until I moved to LA at 18. I had not opened an Us Weekly or a People it just wasn't part of mine.
That's amazing.
I lived in a beautiful bubble in that respect. I was on the cheerleading squad. I never knew like what, I just knew I was beautiful and felt confident, but I didn't know. Not until I moved to LA was I like, ooh, maybe I should try and change my body a little bit.
Yeah.
It was just like, this is the body I'm in and it's beautiful. And then I moved to LA and I was like, ooh, like maybe I should be changing it and manipulating it and working out more and not just playing sports. So it's really interesting how it happens, but I can definitely relate to wanting to shrink and wanting to not be so myself.
Yeah.
Which is so heartbreaking. It's so heartbreaking to not want. So for me, it was less of a physical thing. I was very comfortable in my skin. It was more of like, oh, I'm too emotional. I'm too loud. I'm too bossy.
Exactly.
As a mom, I'm looking at how to phrase these things differently. Like, bossy kids turn into great leaders. I was a bossy kid, quote unquote, because I was like, everyone get in line, listen to the teacher. Like,
You're still pretty bossy, but it's not a bad thing.
It's a good thing. And it creates leaders. And, you know, as a mom, I'm learning, I see all these things, like instead of saying that they're bossy, say that they're great leaders. Instead of saying that they're wild, say that, or crazy, say that they're, you know, have amazing energy. Instead of, you know, just learning how to talk to our children, talk to ourselves in ways that allows us to be the fullest, most beautiful version of who we are. Yeah. And at the end of the day, like anytime I'm being hard on myself for these things that make me, I just think, because sometimes it is hard to talk to yourself in a nice way when you're in a bad pattern, but how would I talk to my child about this? And if you don't have a child, your future child or
child. One of the things you say, I saw this in one of your posts, was like, how would you talk to your version of yourself with a child? Like, what would practice that, right? Because we know the pain that's been caused to us over time through these things. We all have these stories that, like the one you told. So
wait, but what I was going to say is, the thing that makes my children the most beautiful are the things that make them unique and only them. The things that don't make them, the things that make them beautiful aren't the things that match them to other people and like look similar or act similar. The things that I'm so obsessed with my kids are the things that they do that make them unique and only them.
Right.
There's only one us in the world. There's only one me. There's only one you. And when you simplify it to that, those are the things that we're trying to dim because we feel different, but those are the things that make us beautiful.
Right. Right. It's 100%.
So crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what I mean, and I agree with you 100%. And I think, you know, that's why modern marketing works so well, is because what it tries to do is it tries to other us. And because humans are social creatures, which is another reason with the quarantine and everything, is that people are having such a hard time because we are social creatures. During times of stress, during times of anxiety, we want to come together. But to go back to marketing, you know, one of the reasons marketing works so well is because it individualizes you. It makes you feel other. It makes you feel that you are out of the circle unless you have XYZ, unless you change your body, unless you do whatever it is. And so that's why I love what you said. Like, it's so important for kids to know. First of all, it's really important for kids to hear the phrase, I love you no matter what you look like, no matter what your body looks like, no matter what happens to you. Instead of saying, I love you because of your hair, I love you because of your strong legs. Because what happens if your child gets cancer and loses their hair through chemo? What happens if your child breaks their leg? So it's really important to say, I love you because of the inside, but also like to say, I love you because of these unique things about you. Because we want to get it, because those unique things, marketing is going to say that unique thing is a flaw. So we want kids to learn to love that flaw. So when marketing says, oh, you're too bossy, you're too loud, you take up too much space, you're too plus size, whatever it is, that you have stopped that thought process. So kids go, no, that's a good quality about myself. So I love that you do that.
We have this phrase Sophie started using with the kids, and I love it. It's just weird is good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
They would come home in like preschool and be wearing a purple shirt or a pink shirt. They're both boys. We have a baby girl, but the boys would, you know, come home and say like, they made fun of me and said my shirt was weird. And that was when it started. And they wanted to paint their nails because they saw me painting their nails, and it brought them joy to paint their nails. And they'd say that they're making fun of me and calling me a girl or saying that I'm weird. And I would just say, Do the nails being painted make you happy? Yes. Did you enjoy painting your nails with mommy the other night?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, then just say that. Say, when they say, why are your nails painted or why are you wearing purple? Say, because it makes me happy. I like it.
Yeah.
That's the difference. I like it. And learning how to own that, whatever it is, if you have, you know, a birthmark in a weird place, if you have bad skin, if you, whatever it is, just owning who you are and loving who you are and focusing on the things that do bring people joy, that do make people laugh, that do, you know, make people feel comforted or warm. But yeah, I think the most heartbreaking thing again is just anyone, adult, child, that wants to dim who they really are to fit into the mold of what other people, quote, accept.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's important what you said about, you know, painting the nails or wearing the pink shirt. Like, I think we also have to point out like toxic masculinity with that. I think we also just have to point, you know, the homophobia that runs so deep in our culture, you know, like just the idea that little boys have to be boys, little girls have to be girls. I mean, that's, you know, that's why I also talk about like gender reveals and those types of things, like those types of parties is, you know, we have to be very careful about how we're setting up children to be raised. You know, when we say that pink equals girl, blue equals boy,
yeah.
Or, you know, the amount of times I keep saying this, like, I'm so frustrated. I never want to see another picture of pink balloons and a sad dad or a blue cake and a sad mom. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is we're saying, this is how a child, this is a child's entire life path that I am now setting up.
Totally.
So it's, you know, that's where parents, you know, parents can have the opportunity to stop these types of things from happening.
So I just had a thought, because, you know, I've been writing more on toxic masculinity. We've been talking about it, but you pointed out in the beginning that a lot of these body image issues are now becoming more prevalent mm-hmm. among men.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And
it's so interesting, right? Because my hope is that by allowing men to be whoever they feel naturally that they are versus, you know, what they have to do to become Arnold Schwarzenegger in any one of his movies and just kick ass and shoot mm-hmm. some guys and, you know, not cry when their mom dies, like all that mm-hmm. stuff. Mm-hmm. And fuck like porn stars. Instead of that thing, I'm hoping that it creates a more, I'll say egalitarian, but like a better overall functioning relationship between men and women.
Right.
Are you seeing that as men are experiencing more of that shame, that there is a response and women are equalizing somewhat and experiencing less of it?
I don't know. I mean, I think to kind of understand with what's happening with men, I think we sort of have to talk about capitalism. The idea of companies, you know, if a company's not growing, it's dying. And this happens not just because of shareholders and stocks, but rising healthcare costs, right? You know, you have to give people raises over the years. I mean, you know, companies really do need to be making more and more money. They can't just stay stagnant. So the idea that women only have a certain amount of body parts to advertise. We only have two eyebrows. We only have one nose. We've got one head. We've got one head of hair. You know, we've got
many of us have shamed for those body parts. Then we run out.
And then you run out. So what do you do next? Well, we move on to men. Now we tell men they need the six pack. We tell men they need Botox. We tell men they need, you know, laser hair removal. We tell men they need hair plugs. All of the things is there's now an entire new profit margin and business and area to make money. So I don't know if it's lessened for women. I will say that there is a movement, a body positive movement. There are women that are fed up. There are people that are fighting back and saying, absolutely not. You will not advertise to me like this. You will not shame my body for this. And we can see it. We can see it in diversity. We can see it in our ads in general. I would say that the health and wellness industry now that we have is kind of a new iteration of diet culture. It's still telling women they now have to be active. They have to eat, you know, quote unquote, clean. We can't have toxins. We have to, you know, juice and cleanse and do all this stuff. So, you know, I don't know if it's lessened. I would say the target has changed and moved, and it's become a little bit harder to tell. I would say as a whole, people are waking up.
I'd love to hear from you, Soph, because
yeah.
Where is that line between taking care of your body for higher, for its best functioning in a responsible mm-hmm. way?
I mean, I think that, you know, I agree as a whole that these things are true. And I think that that's why what I do and the work in the world that I do is so important. I do run ads on my social media. I do promote products that I absolutely love and stand behind. But what I am promoting is a balanced way of looking at self, the physical body, mm-hmm. a balance of spiritual, emotional, and physical, and that mm-hmm. a healthy body is your vessel, but that it's not the only thing that matters. And yeah, you could buy the skin products and it would make you maybe feel, you know, a better, but it's not going to make you happy on the inside. And mm-hmm. I think that that's the balance is having people, like the people that I spend my time with more than ever, are the ones that if they are influencers, if they do promote different ads, if they are models or actresses living in LA, it's very common. And it's really important to me to hang out with women that don't have eating disorders, that don't promote, you know, skinny is best, that don't promote cleanses and detoxes as a way to eat normally or as a fix, a quick band-aid. Right. I work really hard on walking the walk in terms of, yeah, I have a cleanse that I created on my website. And guess what? It's all eating real foods and there's no calorie counting.
Restriction.
It's about an abundance, of eating real natural whole foods. And so my job is founded on teaching people how to use these tools that we have in life, but not let them use us. We use them. So when I'm doing a cleanse, if I decide that I'm doing a cleanse because it's spring, it's because it's a season change, not because I want to look better in my bathing suit. Will I look better in my bathing suit as well? Probably. Will it feel good to feel lighter and leaner and more bounce in my step? Yes. But that's not the only reason I'm doing it. I'm doing it because mentally, spiritually, emotionally, I become more balanced when I'm more in tune with the foods that I'm eating and I'm not eating out of habit. So I think this is a bigger issue, but I really do believe that my smaller group of friends who I spend time with, who are yoga instructors, fitness instructors, they're not focused on do 10 more for chiseled abs. They will never say that in class. They will say, let's really focus on the core right now and really work on, you know, finding that inner balance of it's a completely different mindset. And I will walk out of a class if I'm in a fitness class and they're talking about your beach body ready, you know, it's very like 1990s to me. And it's something that doesn't resonate and it's perpetuating the problem. And I have friends that are like plus size models that are doing beautiful work with body positivity or body neutrality. And, you know, I think that it is, like you said, people are waking up. It's slower than what I wish, but it's, they're there. And so really, if you're listening to this right now, looking at the people that you follow on your social media feed, do they make you feel good and balanced and real and accepted for being exactly who the fuck you are? Or do you find yourself comparing yourself to them? And that's a personal thing. And I say on this podcast all the time, the mute button is a great button to use. If it's someone who you want to be connected to, but you don't want to see in your feed every day because it makes you feel a certain way, that's important to take note of. As is all advertising that we're consuming, right?
Right. No, and I mean, I definitely, you know, something that you had said with, you know, that it's spiritual and it's mind and it's internal. I mean, I use the example of the time of, you know, when I was deep in my eating disorder and I was over exercising and, you know, eating quote unquote clean or lean or doing juice cleanses and all these things. I mean, I was the most miserable. I mean, I think one thing that we have to be really careful is that when we talk about health, we only talk about the physical and the external, and we exclude mental health and emotional health. And, you know, study after study shows that people report less sick days regardless of their weight, depending on how much they love themselves or respect their bodies. So body love and you know, less stress about our appearance is directly correlated to less sick days reported at work. So, you know, Adi, when you said earlier, you know, well, how can we tell people to, or, you know, how do people live healthy lives without it being diet culture? You know, really my biggest thing is actually advocating for people who are plus size, advocating to make space for plus size bodies, because the more we can reduce stress and anxiety, because stress and anxiety is one of the biggest causes of disease, sickness, you know, all of these other things. And so the more that we can normalize all body types, the more we make space for, you know, less sickness and less disease in the world. But we also make it, you know, even for people in smaller bodies, we create less stress and anxiety that they have to live up to a certain size to be respected and loved.
So that really does rely more on the marketing side of things and the the message we send people about what the goal is regarding the look, period, right? Because I imagine, you know, it's funny, we were watching a movie the other day and this question came up, and it comes up a lot in entertainment. I was like, what is that girl doing with that guy? And it's always, the reason it's been coming up, in my opinion, and for decades, is because it's a pretty patriarchal society. Mm-hmm. And so when people are doing the casting, they're like, how do we find an incredibly talented and also incredibly commercially beautiful mm-hmm. woman to play the role? Mm-hmm. Whereas on the guy side, unless it's like a macho role for an action flick, right, and they need muscles, it's like, how do we find a great actor to do this?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. There's no, mm-hmm. the look part is just not as much a requirement on the men's side. So you end up with, right, these, I got to say, sometimes pretty ridiculous premises when you watch movies. You're like, mm-hmm. I have no idea how this would happen ever.
Right.
But we were watching it and somebody made that comment. And so we were talking about it a little bit. And, you know, I think that maybe not in this, I feel like the body positivity imagery has only come up very recently. Sophie was talking to me just over the last couple of months about some friends of hers who are complaining because they do fit the traditional, oh my God, you're beautiful look, and they're getting less work. Mm-hmm. Because
they're too thin.
They're looking for models that fit traditional body types more.
That was one of the most amazing conversations, by the way, is, you know, as I felt for them, I was also like, trends shift over time, and this mm-hmm. is a beautiful thing for our society that you're not getting work because you're too thin. It's mm-hmm. That's beautiful that it's body yeah. positive. And
I would be careful about saying too thin. I would just say, you know, we just need more diversity. Yeah. You know, we've seen thin, white, young, fitting European, you know, beauty standards, all these things for so long that we've got to make space for, exactly. for more bodies. But you know, body positivity, you know, it's the idea of, you know, everyone has something they don't like about their bodies. And even, you know, I have a friend who has struggled all her life to put on weight, which so many people would say, oh, that would be a dream for me. I wish that was my problem.
Yeah.
But her insecurity around her body, that she's been told she has an eating disorder all her life, or, you know, that she's too thin, she's scrawny, all of these things. And so,
totally.
You know, just the idea, just no matter what a woman looks like, she's not good enough. Yeah. But, you know, again, talking about, you know, diversity in media and people not getting work, you know, it's a sign of the times. It's a sign of changing, and it's a sign of, people being fed up of looking at, you know, really just this kind of perpetuating sort of racist view of what beauty is and who has access to beauty.
And yeah, and I'm wondering if this is going to take a generation to shift. Like, mm-hmm. body positivity image coming up now means the girls growing up now will be seeing more of those images. So when they grow right. up and become consumers
right.
in the next 10, 15, 20 years, they will have a different idea of what to expect in a catalog versus what we did.
Right.
And so I don't know if it works on us because we've been so programmed. I mean, it works to some extent explicitly. Mm-hmm. We've been so programmed to see things a certain way that we can mm-hmm. make shifts. You know, we had an episode with Bruce Lipton, he was talking about sort of the subconscious part of our beliefs and how that guides so much of our, like 95% of our behavior.
Mm-hmm.
And those things are so ingrained for us. You have to do a lot of really deep work to change it.
Right.
And
right.
most people they're not looking to do that.
But isn't that with every older generation? Isn't that with yeah. every generation that gets older? I mean, sure. we look at our parents and it's like, how can you think this way? We look at our grandparents and it's like, I can't even relate to the way you're thinking. I mean, I just think that's with every generation anyways.
Absolutely.
As we get older. And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. Our neural pathways get stuck. It's harder to make those changes. You know, when we see something is normalized for so long, we believe that that's normal. So, you know, I do want to give permission to people who are also struggling right now, going, I don't believe in body positivity. I don't believe that this, you know, we need to be careful about health. We need to be talking about this stuff. I think it's, you know, look, we've been told, I like viewing it as people are mostly victims. You know, we're all kind of victims of this society, but it is our responsibility to start learning and start educating. That's why, you know, I say, especially for parents, one of the great things you can do is learn about body positivity with your kids. If you have teenagers, sit down with them, look at the social media that they're looking at, look at it together and with each account going, how does this person make you feel? How does this make you feel? And if it doesn't make you feel educated, loved, you know, inspired, smart, you know, or you're learning something, unfollow, get that out of your brain space. Mm-hmm. You know, and it really is, it's active work. You know, there's all these books out there that you can get for kids. You know, there's adult books, there's learning tools out there, but it is our responsibility to do that work.
And I think also it's, you know, like our kids come out so pure and as a blank canvas, like instead of having to undo work later on, let's just start from the beginning. Like, don't expose them to those types of things. Like we are, you know, we're really conscious of the school that they go to. It's a Waldorf school. Mm-hmm. Our kids, I mean, they know some kids that go to regular public schools and they are so kind of like, my kids are a little delayed in terms of, they're just still so pure because they're not exposed to the media. Mm-hmm. Period. Yeah. Yeah, they're just absolutely. Not. And that, it taints a human. It taints mm-hmm. a child. It taints adults. Like, it transforms us. Like, I have bad dreams after watching some shows. Like, I am still pure in lots of ways. And that's a good thing. How can we hold on to that? I wanted to also say, I heard for the first time, I've been hearing it, but I actually listened and understood for the first time, body neutrality. And I want to hear mm-hmm. you talk a little bit more about that, because when I just heard it, I went on a trip, not too long ago in February. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls there was talking about her eating disorder and just that her example was like, I wake up in the morning and I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I have a body. Mm-hmm. I have a body and there it is. And part of me felt sad by that because I want people, I'm such a positive person that I'm like, I mm-hmm. want people to just love the shit out of themselves. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily realistic. So what are your kind of thoughts on body neutrality? Is that a kind of a way to having a more positive body image? Is it kind mm-hmm. of like the first stepping stone?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, great question. So I love the idea of body neutrality and I use it. So I do a lot of one-on-one coaching with families and parents and individuals. And we start with body neutrality because we live in such a society that people wake up every day and say, I hate myself. I hate my body. I hate this. I hate everything about myself. And when you say that over and over and over again, it's really hard going from I hate myself to I love myself can feel nearly impossible. It feels fake. And so if we can just say, I'm okay with my body is good enough today. My mm-hmm. body is good enough for what I need today. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think too that also makes it more accessible, you know, for some people who have chronic illnesses, have chronic pain, who feel like their bodies are fighting them, or who are, you know, it's body neutrality is a much more accessible and, you know, neutral way to put it of being in touch with ourselves and being with our bodies. So I really do like the idea of body neutrality. You know, again, one thing I work with my clients is, you know, instead of saying, I hate myself, can you just say, my body is good enough just as it is. My body is okay.
I love that. And I think it is accessible and it's the first step in accepting ourselves.
Right.
Do you find, so I want to talk, a lot of our listeners are women and I want to end up with some tips for parents and or mm-hmm. women. So a couple of things that we talked about, the F shame idea, and you have the my body story hashtag that you use a lot. Do you see like the F shame hashtag that we use that people are a little reluctant sometimes to share because there's so much shame that even though there is a story and they really want to tell it, there's a block?
Yeah. I mean, so the My Body Story was a series that I started. So I started my whole thing online with social media as a fashion blogger, but I also had my eating disorder. And so as I was recovering and I had built this platform, this space for my fashion blogging, I slowly was coming to terms that I don't need it. I don't need this type of validation. It wasn't making me feel good because I was posting myself looking happy and, you know, fashion clothes and all of that. And what I was doing was just setting people up to not feel as good about themselves. I was, you know, I would take 5,000 or not 5,000, I would take 1,000 pictures, you know, for each outfit. And I would post 10 of my favorite ones. I mean, that's just not real. You know, me fake laughing in the camera just wasn't real. So as I was going through my recovery, learning more about feminism, body positivity, body neutrality, these types of things, I started going, I have this big space and I have these followers and this audience. How can I share it? You know, how can I pass the mic? How can I create give this space to other people who aren't listened to, who aren't heard? And so I created a series called My Body Story Series. And that was, if your body could tell a story, what would it tell? And what the beautiful thing about that was, you know, I did have a couple people email me going, oh my God, I would love to share. But I did also have to reach out to people because not everybody wanted to just instantly open up about their bodies. But the great thing about it was two things happened. When people wrote their stories and I wrote it on the blog and shared it on social media, they instantly felt the relief of it. You know, like Brene Brown says, like, it's the stuff that we keep inside. It's the things that we don't talk about, and like the shame stuff that weighs us down, that we are bad. And once you get that off your chest, once you share that with other people, it's almost like you can take a breath of relief. It was like, well, these things aren't scary because now everyone knows. So it's not this hidden thing in my closet anymore. It's out there and it's just reality. So that was the one part, is that people just felt relief. The second part was that people reading it felt relief. Because another thing about shame is that we think we're the only ones feeling it. We think, you know, again, it's that social mentality that we have, that if we are not in the circle, we are outside in the wilderness and we are at higher risk for dying. And, you know, if we're weird, if we have our stuff, that means we are not in the circle. We are not accepted by society. And so what happened is there would be a lot of people reading at home, reading on social media, going, oh my God, me too. I have this same disorder. I have the same skin condition. I am missing two toes just like this person. I have the same disability. I had my parent tell me to lose weight, or, you know, that my hair is ugly. You know, it's all of these stories that, while they're so unique and individual, as humanity, as a shared humanity, we can identify and see ourselves in them in a certain way, because we all have an insecurity. We all have something we don't like. So it created a sense of community. It brought people together in their weirdness and their own trauma and their own PTSD, but it also got that stuff off of people's chests and their own individual stuff. And I've had people years later reach out to me, tell me, that was the beginning of my healing journey. Thank you so much for doing that. You know, that I never had anybody create space for me. And I would, that, you know, it was the starting point of something so much more beautiful than what I was living.
Love that.
That's awesome. That's amazing.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. We have a tagline, about radical transparency, and mm-hmm. it's what's helped us really heal from, some deep trauma. We had cheating in our relationship and lies and mm-hmm. manipulation and, you know, personally, I had like this feeling of not knowing, like the sky was blue anymore. Like I didn't, mm-hmm. like the ground was taken out from underneath mm-hmm. me. And so mm-hmm. there was trust that needed to be built all over again, maybe for the first time, but definitely all over again. And mm-hmm. what really helped us, and I intuitively knew, like even in our therapy appointments in the very beginning, I was like in my early 20s, this was 15 mm-hmm. years ago. And our therapist was like, yeah, I don't know if that's the best way to do this, to mm-hmm. heal from this. It's a lot of information and it can be re-traumatizing. And I was like, yeah, nope, this is what I need. I need yeah. to know everything. And mm-hmm. that's what worked for me. And really connecting to what it is that I needed to feel safe was the mm-hmm. most important thing. And I also had an eating disorder. I overate, I underate, I controlled mm-hmm. my eating in my early 20s. And it was probably related to this stuff because I mm-hmm. felt so insecure and felt mm-hmm. so unsafe. So it was like the one thing I could control, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. But I think I think there's something to this, and exactly as you're saying, but for us, radical transparency has been the thing that allowed me to feel like I really knew my partner, and mm-hmm. and letting myself be seen, coming back to mm-hmm. the very beginning of what we were talking about, like he sees me fully, you know, with acne, mm-hmm. 9 months pregnant, miserable, moody, cheating on him, eating disorders, like mm-hmm. he sees me, my partner sees me and accepts me and loves mm-hmm. me for all of those things. Mm-hmm. He doesn't love me any less. He doesn't love me anymore. He just loves me as me. And it probably is the first time in my life that someone has loved me to that capacity and that I allowed someone to see me.
Right.
So I think that there's a lot of healing in that on both sides for us. And then, mm-hmm. Being able to just fully show up to who you are and shine bright.
Yeah, no, and thank you for sharing that. I'm sorry to hear of all this stuff, the shit that's been there. I mean, but I think it's really important that you share it, that you're open. And, you know, when you said you had an eating disorder, that actually caught me off guard a little bit, because we had talked about your childhood of being so boundaried and being so, you know, you didn't have People magazine and all these other things, and such a kind of, sounds like it was, you know, no child is perfect. No child comes out of childhood unscathed or trauma free, but you know, there was a lot of really good things. And so I appreciate that you shared the eating disorder, because I think it's really important for people to see. And that's why I share my story about that. I was a fashion blogger and I was this, that we see perfect people. We see people who we think have it all together. And especially with people who fit society's beauty standards. You know, for me, I know that I'm a thin person. I know that I'm white. I know, you know, I have long hair. You know, I know that I fit so many of these aspects of society's beauty standards, and yet I still had an eating disorder. So it shows you that this ideal, this perfect idea that we have of beauty, mental health, wellness, all these things, that it doesn't exist.
No,
it doesn't exist, because everyone has their stuff.
Yeah.
Everyone has their stuff, but we need more people talking about it. We need more people talking about their stuff. And so I had moderated a panel, in London, on my last trip to London, like a year and a half ago. And the panel was about similar stuff, shame and, you know, the stuff that we hold on to in trauma. And one of the women that I was speaking with, she said, you know, it's great that we have people that talk about their trauma and talk about their stuff, but one of the problems is that we all talk about it after we've healed. We all talk about it after it's come out, because it's terrifying to talk about it in the middle. And it would be great if we could have more people in the middle of it talking about it.
Yep.
But that puts us at risk. That may, you know, you may not be physically unsafe, but that is terrifying to so many people. You know, for me, that when I had my eating disorder, to come out and say, I have an eating disorder in the middle of a fashion blog post, that wasn't going to happen. I had to do healing work to get there. But it is also interesting to note too that, you know, when we hear of people who have recovered, when we hear this, we're hearing that I'm on the other side, I'm this. And so sometimes that healing, that vulnerability still feels unattainable. Mm-hmm. So I think it's important to say, you know, I still struggle. I still have my days. You know, I talk about body image, body neutrality, you know, all of this stuff, how to raise kids that love their bodies. Do I still wake up some mornings and go, all right, thighs, all right, let's do this. Come on. All right, hair, you know, all right, dandruff and acne and all this other shit that I have. Yes. Because I'm human and I live in the society that we live in. And so I think it's important for us to talk about the things that we've recovered from, but it's also important for us to say, today's not a perfect day, but I'm going to get through it and it's good enough.
Absolutely. And absolutely, that there just is no perfect, you know?
Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, we try to share a lot of our personal struggles as close to while they're happening as we.
Right, and I'm not trying to say, you know, you two have to share because of influencers and that, because we're all managing and navigating. But I mean, even just for listeners, you know, open up to a friend. You know, don't hold stuff inside. I think this is the most important thing, because when we feel alone in our stuff, we find unhealthy coping mechanisms, whether that's an eating disorder, binge eating, drugs, alcohol, you know, looking for love in places that are incorrect, or we hurt other people. You know, we lash out at other people when we're holding stuff inside. So I promise you, if you reach out to someone and you say, I'm struggling with something, not only will they hopefully be able to hold space, but I promise that they're going to have be going through something similar. Mm. I promise that you're now giving them permission to open up about their stuff.
Yep.
I love this as a transition, because we talked, you said this was really amazing advice to the people listening. And we love to ask everybody who comes on the podcast, what is, so that's great advice you just gave. What's the best advice that you feel like you've ever received?
It's not about me. Mm. Someone else's behavior has nothing to do with me. And so I understand that that can be hard, you know, especially if someone is being violent or someone is, you know, racist, homophobic, sexist, these things. But to, at the end of the day, to go, that is that person's trauma. That is that person's upbringing. That is that person's stuff. And, you know, someone cutting me off while I'm driving my car, someone shoving me out of the way, someone yelling at me in the street, someone saying something, someone commenting something crappy on my social media, someone DMing me, someone, a guy sending me a dick pic. Like, none of this stuff is about me. This is about collective trauma. This is about other people's stuff and other people's healing that has to happen.
Yep.
I have to say, it's really hard some days to not take things personally.
Yeah.
And especially if you've been raised that everything is your fault, that everything, yeah, you cannot take up more space, that everything is about you. And especially if you've been raised by parents that take everything personally. Mm. But I think that was it's a really good tip, and it's something I always come back to. It's something my therapist always has to remind me of. So it's still a work in progress, but you know, it's not about you. It's about someone's own PTSD, someone's own trauma that they are projecting onto you.
Yeah.
I love it. I love it. What out of everything you've done, what has been your proudest moment to date?
My proudest moment. So I was awarded. So Chrissy Metz, she's the actor, and she's a plus size actor in This Is Us, the NBC TV show. It's incredible. If you're not watching it, watch it.
We love that show.
She gave me an award. She was nominated for a this nonprofit called Girl Hero, and they do a lot of amazing work around the world. She was nominated for a Girl Hero Award, and she was, every person that got an award was allowed to pick one person that they felt like was doing really incredible work in the field of helping girls, helping community. And she gave me the award, and oh, I'd never met her. I didn't, you know, I knew her show. I followed her on social media, and I had her rep email me one day and say, Chrissy Metz would like to honor you at an award ceremony. And it was, I still have to like pinch myself when I think about it. You know, when I tell it's just so weird. It's so weird and incredible and beautiful and wonderful. And, I think that's one of my proudest moments that reminded me that, okay, I'm doing the right thing. Don't listen to the haters. Don't listen to the negativity. Absolutely. Don't listen to my own insecurities. If Chrissy Metz thinks I'm doing a good job, I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
It's everything. And Adi and I, we, you know, for anyone listening, like those things, whether you're on a TV show or you're just like someone who is in our community and follows us and supports us, like every little thing, as people that are so sensitive and in this space, we listen to everything. Like I cry all the time over emails that I'm sent about how we've helped them, our mm-hmm. podcast, how, you know, the work that we're doing in the world has encouraged them to show up better, brighter, more fully into who they are. Like we all read everything and mm-hmm. take everything to heart. So that's what I thought of when you just said that. Like I've had also like celebrities be on stage and mention my name and say things, but then also just like everyday people that bring us to tears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what about on the flip side, your hardest moment?
I mean, I think my hardest moment, I mean, look, I think we've had a lot of hard moments, I think, but specifically in the work that I'm doing is, not getting exhausted is not the right word, but you know, a lot of times I feel like I'm playing whack-a-mole. You know, something comes up, I feel like I fight that, you know, another thing comes up. I just feel like diet culture, there's just constant things popping up. You know, it's constant work to not hate ourselves and to love ourselves in this world. And I have to remind myself that even baby steps are okay, that, you know, we may not fully love ourselves all the time, but if we can be okay with ourselves and we can raise kids that are okay with themselves, that's, you know, a little bit of work is better than none at all. And just hoping that, remembering that change doesn't always have to happen on a giant scale, that change can happen in ripple effects too. You know, it can happen with a workshop I do with five parents. It can also happen with an auditorium of 1,000, but it can happen with a one-on-one coaching session. And remembering, you know, the same, I'm thinking about the coronavirus, but the same way that this kind of trickles and that, you know, you go to a party with 10 people and now 3 people are affected, you know, maybe we can also view that as like spreading body positivity and spreading, you know, releasing shame and these other things that, you know, every time you talk about it, you're going to affect people. You may not affect everyone. You may not affect every single all 10 people in that room, but one or two are going to walk away and they are going to ripple out that positive energy too. And so I think it's remembering that, you know, I may do a workshop and not everyone may see everything that I'm saying, but they will see most of it. And they will at least, those little tools that they walk away with are still more important than not having any tools at all.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you make sure that you show up to this work as your best self? What's your self-care routine to make sure that you can do the work on an ongoing basis?
Therapy. I see a therapist. I think that's super important if you have access to a therapist. If not, I think self-help books are really great. I think going on YouTube, being careful, there's a lot of gurus on YouTube who really shouldn't be doing help for people, but finding someone, even if it's a friend or whatever, but finding a space where you have someone you can talk to, you have someone you can share, and finding a space maybe on Instagram or YouTube where there is someone that is talking about mental health, you're learning new skills and tools. But therapy for me, meditation for me is also a huge one. I try to do it every day. I'm a huge fan of Tara Brach, which is just self-compassion, self-compassion, self-compassion. Looking at memes sometimes and taking days off and going for walks and looking at pictures of cats, like, you know, checking out sometimes, Netflixing and chilling, like, you know, remembering that I don't have to be perfect and I can have days off and I can, if I'm having a day where I really just need to be by myself, that's okay. I can turn my phone off. But really meditation and just really trying to practice what I preach all the time and being gentle with myself.
I love that.
That's really, really great.
So our lives in this ignited world, you know, we're all about igniting people, igniting ourselves, and sharing all of that along the way. What ignites you?
What ignites me? I think maybe this is not the answer that you're looking for. My anger and frustration ignites me. When I see ads that make me upset, that ignites me. When I see, you know, I do a workshop and, you know, so the way I got started into working with families and working, you know, with parents, teachers, caregivers, even doing corporate type of work is, so when I made the shift from going from fashion blogger to more body positive and activism, I got really into body positive activism for a while. I started hosting events around the country, and I was hosting events for adults and teens and just people who are already in the place where they didn't like their bodies. This wasn't preventative care. And what I was doing is we do the workshop, we talk about our bodies, and then I would go around the room and say, where did your self-hatred start? Where did your stuff start? And 99% of the time, people would say, it started because my mom told me I was too fat. It started because my dad told me I was ugly. It started because my coach wouldn't let me play on the team. My teacher didn't call on me. You know, all of these things where a child was made to feel othered. So when I see that happening, whether it's a social media post, it's an advertising, it's on TV, it's whatever it is, when I see that, that's what activates me. That's what drives me. That's what lights my fire, because that's where I'm like, this is a problem and it needs to be addressed. And
absolutely.
I'm not so much, you know, I've really calmed down. I used to do, back when I was doing more activism, I was very angry. I was very frustrated. It was a lot of call out culture. It was a lot of, this brand is doing wrong, you know, boycott. It was this and this. And I've shifted more into education to where, yeah, the brand's doing wrong. What can you do about it? Yes, you can call out the brand. Yes, you can email them. Yes, you can tell the manager they need to remove this product. But how do you manage already having seen that information? Your kid has already seen that. So you storming with a pitchfork is still not going to mitigate the harm that your child has just seen. So now it's a lot more into toolkits. It's a lot more into, I want people to actively be able to walk away with a handful of things they can do in that moment. I don't want to be preaching to the choir about what's, you know, anger and frustration. Yes, that has a space, but that's not the end result of my work. Because if that's the end result of my work, I'm just in a room full of people. Then we're angry and we're mad and we're yelling and we're going to end up attacking each other because there's no place for the anger and frustration to go.
I love it. And we'll make sure that we have links to any resources you have for our people and parents to be able to apply those tips. Because in the end, like you said, it's about being able to apply these principles in life.
Yeah. So I actually have a free resource page. So if you go to danasukow.com/resources, it's free. I'm not collecting email addresses or anything. But if any parent or even an individual, maybe you're a teen listening to this and you don't have kids, but if you want to learn about body positivity, so there are documentaries that you can watch. I have a list of body positive Instagram accounts. So if you want to diversify your feed, if you want to make your Instagram or your social media look more like the real world, there's like 20 or 30 Instagram accounts that you can follow. I also have an amazing reading list. So I have books that are categorized by young kids, teens, and adults that are body positive book list. So please visit that, share it with any teachers or friends that you have, people that need, you know, want to start learning, but don't know where to start.
That's wonderful.
Love that. Thank you so much for all your work.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me. This is a great conversation. And, you know, I know it's not going to air for a while, but just be safe. And, you know, it's weird, weird times we are living in right now. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And
take care.
You know, in times of stress, people fall back on their typical habits, even when those aren't great. So I think this will be a very important conversation for many years to come.
And you know, just to say, if for anyone who's falling into what they feel like are bad habits, or they feel like I'm not doing great, you know what? It's a stress time. Just get food. I don't care if you're eating chips and candy. I don't care if you had a soda for breakfast. I don't care. Just make sure you're getting nutrients and sustenance. And whatever you are able to feed your children is good enough right now. Like we really have to release some of these stresses. If you didn't do your push-up challenge, that's fine. It's, you know, like,
damn it, you just reminded me.
Mute all of the exercise and all that stuff, because all I want people looking at is news maybe once a day and cat memes and body positivity and things that make you happy and are educating.
And this is us.
But I really just calming. Just find a sense of calm right now. And I know that this isn't airing for a while, but even if this airs and we're still kind of going through this sort of collective trauma of Corona and COVID, just, you know, be gentle on yourself. If you've lost weight or gained weight during this period and you're coming out, it's fine. In billions of people on the planet are also going through the same thing.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Thank you again. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And obviously follow Dana and let us know what resonated for you. Send us those DMs, screenshots, and all that.
Thank you. Love you all.
See you next week.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Ignited Podcast. We were so happy to have you along for this ride. Please go and subscribe to this. Leave us a review. We love hearing from you. And if you want more, don't forget to go to ignited.com, where all the podcast episodes are available with show notes and so many of the little details and links from each one of these interviews. And you can look at all the future events that we have going on, all the things that make Ignited so special, even beyond this recording. Again, thank you so much for joining us. We will see you next week.